It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey friends, today we're chatting about something that is of great importance to all rose lovers, and that's fragrance. Rebecca Kratom of David Austin Roses is back to chat about the elements of rose fragrance and how breeding for fragrance gets tricky. Hey, Rebecca, welcome back to Rose Chat.
Well, hello, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me back on the show. And here we are into spring now, and we are excited about what's soon to happen. Roses with lots of fragrance.
Yes, yes. Last time we were talking, the whole country was iced over, but now roses are leafing out and soon we'll have blooms.
And we are looking forward to it.
We sure are. Now, Rebecca, let's just talk about the first thing people do when they come near a rose.
You have to put your nose right down into that big, beautiful bloom and take a whiff. And hopefully you're going to just be transported to a grandmother's garden or a warm summer afternoon. Fragrance really does bring back memories, doesn't it?
Yes, and it is a priority for people. I hate that look of disappointment when they see a beautiful rose with no fragrance. And it appears that fragrance has been a priority since the beginning of time, so it's nothing new.
Absolutely. You know, fragrance was used to woo many lovers throughout history. The Romans really valued it for scenting their rooms and their baths. I think one of our most famous women, Cleopatra, actually used rose petals spread deeply on her chamber floors to woo Mark Antony. And it is said that whenever he saw a rose, she wanted him to think of her.
Yeah, she was a crafty one. She was a smart chickie. Yes, he didn't have a chance against all that fragrance of those damask and gallica roses that were probably very prevalent where she was.
You're exactly right. And you know, you bring up the damask and the gallicas. Those are really kind of the original roses that we associate with fragrance and that caught everyone's attention back then. You know, around 10th century Persia, they were making rose oil to scent not only, you know, the body to, it was very much a luxury item, but also for flavorings in food. Sometimes when you're reading, you'll see attar of roses or rose otto, and that refers to rose oil. Then when you kind of come into Victorian times and things started getting a little bit stinky around that era, rose scents were really, really important to mask odors. And that's also when people really started to kind of define the fragrance profiles and the chemicals associated with them. The really first time they started to chart and distinguish rose profiles for fragrance then.
Well, you know, we say rose fragrance as though there is only one, but that's certainly not true. And as we were talking about old garden roses and the ones that Cleopatra used so effectively, we just think sometimes that all old roses were old rose fragrant, but they weren't. And so we know that those that were fragrant we were brought to the forefront and kept in commerce longer and shared more. But we think that only modern roses today don't have fragrance, but the old ones, not all the old ones did either. So it is a tricky business. And as you know, the damask and the gallica certainly were, but it's not just a fragrance. There's types of fragrance, right?
There sure is. You know, originally, I think there were seven main scents that the Victorians started defining. But at David Alston, we've kind of broken that down into five major profiles. I'm going to list those, and then we're going to talk about each one. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. So the very first is Old Rose. That's what we think of when we think a rose should have a fragrance. And that's the one fragrance that everyone says, yes, it's a rose. It's associated with that damask fragrance. The second is tea. And you go, tea, I love tea roses. And for those of you who are familiar with tea roses, that has a real spicy scent, almost like you have just opened a pack of fine China tea. The third is myrrh, and the British are especially fond of the myrrh fragrance. It is almost a warm anisey scent. And then guess what fragrance we like over here in the US?
Oh, I'm excited to hear this one.
Fruit. We absolutely love fruity fragrances in the US. So that can be anything that is jammy, has a citrusy scent, smells like berries. You'll see sometimes things listed as blackberry, currant, raspberry. And all four of those fragrances come from the petals. There's a little gland down at the base of the petal where this fragrance emits from. Okay. Now the fifth fragrance is musk. And a lot of people, when I'm giving seminars, will go, ooh, like Jovan Musk from the 70s. I don't think I would like that. But musk comes from the stamens and not the petals. And it just takes a little bit of musk fragrance to perfume the air and lure in what? Our pollinators. Because the fragrance of roses, as much as we humans adore, it's not for us, it's for the pollinators, the birds, the bees, and the other insects that are visiting those plants and doing their little thing. So a lot of times people will say, well, Rebecca, I want to start a garden that I'm going to do a fragrance profile garden. What roses are associated with each of these fragrances? And I'm going to just name maybe three out of each category. So grab your pen and paper. Out of the Old Rose, I think, you know, and this was Mr. Alston's, one of his very favorite fragrances, Gertrude Jekyll. And then our newer rose, Desdemona, is just amazing. And then if you're looking for a little rose to kind of plant in mass in a border, Harlow Carr smells phenomenal. I was calling on a customer and it was almost November. They were in the Pacific Northwest and I smelt Harlow Carr before I could ever find it. And I walked through this garden center going, where is it coming from? And that much perfume came off of one little blossom that was still hanging on in November. So tea, which we said smelled like China tea, that is often found in yellow or apricot colored roses. Think Vanessa Bell. And Vanessa Bell has kind of a green tea and honey scent. Very, very nice. Lady of Shalott, which is a very versatile rose that we see doing great from coast to coast. But then there's also some pink roses that have a tea fragrance, and that would be Princess Alexandra of Kent and even Princess Anne. With myrrh, I was telling you the British absolutely love that. Gentle Hermione is one of my very favorite roses with that scent. I absolutely love the look of the petals. It's a pale pink and light passes so nicely through those petals. But then you also have Strawberry Hill, which was one of the first David Austins I ever planted. It smells phenomenal. And everyone is in love with the look of Boscobel. That is actually a myrrh fragrance rose. So when we go on down to our fruity examples of a citrusy scent, and one of my favorites is the Poet's Wife, and then the new Gabriel Oak and Eustacia Vi, which were introduced this year, have very, very strong fruity fragrances. Darcy Bustle, named after the ballerina, I would say would be a medium fruity fragrance. And then Olivia Rose Austin, which shows up on so many favorite rose lists, is also fruity. But do you realize out of a ranking of 1 to 5, 5 being the strongest and 1 being the softest, Olivia Rose Austin, we give a 2. And that brings about a really important point, Teresa. A lot of people who are new, they actually end up saying, I'm only going to buy roses with very high fragrance profiles, like a 4 or a 5. And they are leaving a lot of amazing roses on the table when they do that. So Olivia Rose Austin is only a 2, and she's showing up on everyone's favorite list. So then when we get down to musk, another misnomer is a lot of folks think, oh, you know, the higher the petal count, the more fragrant the rose. Well, in some cases that is true, but the new Tottering by Gently that has come out has a musk fragrance. It is a single and it has a lot of stamens. So the fragrance is coming from the stamens. Molyneux is kind of a combination. It's a tea musk. And then a lot of our ramblers have a musk fragrance like Malvern Hills. Again, a lot of stamens that are present. And there you have it.
Wow. You know, there's so much information there that we could just pick apart. You know, last year, the James Alexander Gamble Fragrance Award for the ARS went to Olivia Rose Austin. And to know that it only rates a 2, it's one of my personal favorites in my garden. So we do want to be careful about only going for those higher numbers, because that is such a beautiful rose. And it is fragrant.
It is. And so just because something gets a 1 or 2 doesn't mean that it's not fragrant. And you brought out an amazing point there. We only give it a 2 and it won a fragrance award. So there you go.
It is a very popular rose and it is so beautiful. You know, we know that fragrant roses sell because, you know, you said you hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. What's your most favorite, fragrant favorite? Hard to say. And I have so many beautiful, healthy roses that aren't fragrant.
Yeah.
So what's the tricky part? Does disease resistant and fragrance, are they the tricky combination?
Well, you know, you have really brought apart, you would think if I could just cross 2 fragrant parent roses, if I cross, let's say, I'm going to cross Harlow Carr and I'm going to cross Gertrude Jekyll, I'm going to get the most fragrant, wonderful rose in the world. That's not true. And guess why? Because fragrance is a recessive gene. All right. And that makes it really, really tricky to breed for. So just crossing 2 fragrant parents doesn't guarantee a fragrant rose. The other thing that is tricky, when we're talking about David Austin roses, all of our roses are bred for disease resistance, fragrance, repeat bloom, and that lovely grace and charm and beauty that they're known for. Well, fragrance, that gene is often tied to roses that aren't that disease resistant. You know, I hate to say it, and I love a Mr. Lincoln as much as anyone else. It's incredibly fragrant, but it is riddled with disease, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes it really hard to select a really heady, fragrant rose that is not covered in black spot and powdery mildew. And it's just a matter of trial and error. You know, that's why David Austin Roses starts out each year with over 250,000 crosses to try to chart and find new combinations that are going to bring all of this to the forefront. And they don't do as many crosses as they used to because we have whittled it down and we're seeing patterns, but you always have to push the envelope. You know, you have to see what else is going to come forward in your breeding programs. So it is a trick, and it's why there aren't more fragrant roses out there.
Well, the British are known for this too, but my garden style is a cottage garden style. So, mm-hmm. you know, when there's where you want to pair your roses with lilies and some other things
that absolutely
add scent to your garden. And I have a little bit of property here, not a whole lot, but it's not a tiny lot. And I have some big old rugosas, and they'll bloom off and on all summer. They get a huge bloom in the spring, of course, and so fragrant. So I've gotten in the habit of, when I make a beautiful bouquet with beautiful roses that maybe aren't as fragrant, tucking mm-hmm. in a little rugosa, and they think, oh my goodness, you know, it kind of overcomes the whole bouquet. So, you know, as gardeners, we can get tricky too. And
that's exactly right.
Yeah, we want to use it all to, you know, we want to be tricky in a good way. Cleopatra had her ways with those roses. And so, but we want to be tricky gardeners, and we want to fill our gardens with scent and beauty. And we don't just want one. We do want beautiful roses. We do want healthy roses. And we're not, you know, most gardeners today aren't ready to throw out the health of the rose and the beauty of the rose just for fragrance. So,
exactly.
So it is a combination, and we're so fortunate that we have so many choices.
You're exactly right. And you know, there is a time and a place for heady fragrance. Let's say that you are having a dinner party and you are an accomplished chef in your own right. And, you know, you're serving these numerous courses and you've pulled out all the stops. Your dining room table is not the place to put highly fragrant roses. That's where you should go to some of your other varieties, like Tranquility, for instance, mm-hmm. makes a lovely cut flower, and we give it a fragrance rating of 1. It smells like sliced apple. It's a very clean, delicate fragrance. That's where you would use something like that that had less fragrance. An entry hall or a powder room, that may be where you want to do your arrangements with the strongest fragrant roses. So again, think about where you're going to be using these cuts in the house as well.
Well, you know, it is about perspective. You know, not only do our noses smell differently, but even the rose, the true attar of rose, we think differently about it in this country as opposed to the East. Like you mentioned used in cooking. We were in Turkey a couple of years ago, and so much of their treats and their foods, they have rose oil. You know, it's just a part, the rose flavoring is just a part of their what they use in cooking. But here, even if I have it in cooking, I taste it as a fragrance.
Yeah.
It was wonderful in their cooking while I was there. But typically when I taste it, I'm tasting a perfume as opposed
right.
to vanilla or cinnamon or something. So it is about your perspective, and we are different. You know, we smell differently. So myrrh just, you know, might be your thing, which I love myrrh. But you know, some of the other fragrances, you know, are just as wonderful. So it just depends.
Absolutely. The fragrance is a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't all wear Chanel number 5. And so that's why we are attracted to different roses. You know, going back, it really ties us back to memories. Fragrance and memories are so closely associated in the brain. And, you know, it's a great way to honor someone by honoring a fragrance that you remember growing up with that was in the garden. Or perhaps you have kids and you're wanting to create memories for the future for them. And you go about saying, you know, I'm going to really do a fruity scented garden so my kids grow up remembering that. But it is quite lovely, and it's quite personal.
It is. One of the plants of my youth were irises. Where I came from, irises were everywhere. So nice. When I sit down on my rump to a deadhead up close and personal, an iris, automatically I'm 8 years old again. So it's just wonderful. Some people, it's lilacs, and we have so much in our flower world to entertain us and bring back good memories, but I certainly wouldn't want to do it without roses.
I agree 100%.
They're just, you know, there's just something about those roses and their beauty as well as their fragrance.
That's true. And, you know, roses also have health benefits. Just that fragrance alone can relieve stress. We're talking about it taking your mind to someplace growing up or when you were a child, fond memories. But like rose water and rose oils can be a skin tonic. It's known to reduce inflammation, which is why a lot of cosmetics have rose water in it. It is known for my husband's mother, who was Miss Cyprus back in the day, religiously put rose water around her eyes to get the puffiness out. So, you know, it's used for a stress reliever, antidepressants. You know, sprinkling some of those fragrant rose petals in your bath is an amazing way to unwind in the evening.
Oh, it sure is. I just, floral scents are, they just mean everything to me, and it is very relaxing. So, you know, they don't come cheap, the good ones. They've been a luxury in every era, going all the way back, but boy, they just bring so many health benefits. And like you say, just relaxation and just healing touches all throughout.
And you're right. I think we have all been through the ringer in the past year and a half now, almost. And any way that we can think to pamper ourselves or to create our own little backyard oasis is a win. It's some place where we can kind of de-stress, we can comfort ourselves, we can spend time with family, and roses are an amazing way to do that. And that fragrance is going to soothe your mind, not just your eyes.
So true. You know, I think we talked about it on our last podcast, but up to nearly 20 million new gardeners. You know, so many people took to their gardens and their yards and their balconies during COVID. And I truly hope they get to stay there. I truly hope that's something that they've brought into their life, because it just means everything to me. It is. I know there's a meme out that the garden is digging in the dirt where I go to unwind, and all the different things that you hear about, you know, these little funny memes. But it's just very true.
It is.
Once I start digging and just working in the garden, just everything else just kind of floats away.
And that is totally worth the price of the rose.
You know, sometimes you hear, oh, roses are expensive, but my goodness, look what they do. And they keep doing it over and over and over.
You know, just,
oh my goodness, they perform and perform and perform.
It is true. I was actually, I think that I mentioned in your last podcast, David Alston Jr. Traveled with me when I was first hired, and he trained me. And such a delightful man. It was an amazing 2 weeks to really kind of get into the mindset of this amazing company and just kind of hear personal stories. And one of the things that he said to me was, he said, you know, cut flowers are great. And mind you, he is the gentleman who started our luxury cut division. But he said, I can never understand. And of course, this is a man, not a woman saying this. He said, I can never understand that for about the same price or less, you can buy a rose bush for the garden and get as many bouquets as you want for years to come, where you buy one bouquet that may cost four times what the one rose bush did, and it's good for a week. So,
But it brings something with it too, that the person spent the money on you or you treated yourself. It's just all there. You know, we just want flowers in our lives, regardless of how we can get them.
It's so true. It is so true. Well, you know, I think a lot of people want to know, so what are some of my favorite fragrant David Alston roses? And some of them I've already mentioned, some of the older varieties. Of course, Gertrude Jekyll, that lovely climber we talk about over and over again. Munstead Wood with that dark, dark blossom and fruity notes. Jude the Obscure is an older variety that I think top a lot of people's list because they remember it from a family member's garden. And it has an interesting profile that, you know, is almost kind of like Sauterne wine. And then, of course, Gentle Hermione. The first time I truly smelled Gentle Hermione, I had gone over to England to help with an open house for their UK customers. And they had Gentle Hermione tree roses in this display, and they were right at nose height. And the first thing I noticed were how beautiful they were. And I walked up because I had to do the sniff. And oh my goodness, I was completely wooed. And the first thing that I did when I came back to the States was go buy Gentle Hermione.
Now I have to put it on my list.
Yeah.
I've never had that one.
And she's an older variety, but I really like her. I truly, truly do. Out of the newer varieties, we've talked about Vanessa Bell, and I'm going to be very candid here because she has a pale yellow flower that kind of ages to almost a cream tone. She is not one of our top sellers in the States, but she really should be because not only is she very disease resistant, she's amazingly fragrant and pairs quite nicely with anything lavender in the garden, which, you know, if you put lavender or purple with any rose, you're going to have a winner. Desdemona with that old rose fragrance, those blossoms come out, or if you're growing it in partial shade, they will be a very, very pale pink and then go to almost a white. Ancient Mariner came out. It looks so similar to Olivia Rose Alston, okay? But it's a more open, I think it has a lot of the same parentage. It's one of these roses that we have that is flying under the radar. It's not at the top of everyone's list because it has not gotten as much press, I'd say. But when you see that rose come out of the ground in the spring, you can just see it's like, rah, I'm ready to do this thing. And as a benefit, it smells really good. Poet's Wife, you hear me talk about that nonstop. And then I personally have not smelt Gabriel Oak or Eustacia Vye, but are folks in Tyler, Texas, who actually have grown it out, both of them. They say they are divine. They smell absolutely wonderful. Gabriel Oak, I feel, is going to be better for warmer climates. And Teresa, I think you would do quite well with Eustacia Vye because it likes cooler climates.
It's gorgeous. It's so pretty. I hope to get that one soon. That's so pretty. It to is. Your list that you several that you mentioned, I have and totally agree. Another one that you don't hear much about but is beautiful in my garden is Maiden Marian.
Yes, that is a very old variety.
Yes, and it's been around a while, but it's lovely.
Yeah, it is lovely. And, you know, that's the thing about the David Alstons. At David Alston, we're always breeding to bring forward the next best thing. And so there are a lot of these old varieties that perhaps they aren't as disease resistant, because remember that conversation we had earlier in the show about fragrance not always being the most disease resistant roses. But as we move forward, we are really trying to work to get high fragrance ratings and high disease resistance together. And it is difficult. I am not going to lie. It is a trick. Everyone's nose is different. Men tend to not have as good a sensory as women. But I think my husband may be able to smell things more than I do.
There you go.
Yeah.
Always a rule breaker. There you go. There's always a rule breaker.
Exactly.
Rebecca, this has been so great. I'm so glad to talk to you coming back.
Thank you so much. And it is always a pleasure. I absolutely love being on your show. And, you know, here's to an amazing gardening season to all of your listeners. And here's to, you know, finding refuge in our gardens.
Absolutely. So today's been educational, but it's also been laced with garden charm. And I love that. It's just so great to visit. And now I'm going to be thinking of what we'll have you back to talk about next.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Well, friends, one of my favorite authors, Beverly Nichols, once said, "To be overcome by the fragrance of flowers is a delectable form of defeat." So until next time, I hope you are overcome by the fragrance of flowers. And as always, we wish you happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com. Or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag Rose Chat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat podcast. The Rose Chat podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.